Okay, welcome everybody. First of all, thank you for coming. First announcement is welcome to Viviane Carvalho da Anuncia Sal, who's agreed to give us this talk. And the other announcement is the second speaker, Jennifer Harris, cannot make it today, so she apologizes. Very sorry, but we'll discuss Brazilian and Portuguese poetry and Scottish poetry, and perhaps we can spend a bit more time in our conversation, activities if we like, or we'll just finish earlier. So I'll introduce Viviane, and Viviane will talk for about 20 minutes, and then she has some activities for us and some discussion regarding her project. So Viviane is a teaching associate at the Center for Latin American Studies here at Cambridge, and a senior member of Robinson College. She studied at the University of Sao Paulo, where she obtained a degree in Portuguese and English studies, and then a PhD in literary studies. Her dissertation was on Northern Irish poetry, and it was published in 2015 as Exile, Home, and City, The Poetic Architecture of Belfast. She has also published articles on concrete poetry and translations of poems by Seamus Heaney and Paul Muldoon. When she was a visiting scholar at CLAS in 2014, she helped in the organization of an exhibition of concrete poetry. It was the 50th anniversary of the movement. And she has continued to research into Brazilian and also Latin American avant-garde poetry, politics, and also new methodologies in language teaching. And today she will explore the use of scientific discourse in the creative dialogue between Scottish and Brazilian concrete poets. And then she will invite us to engage in some retranslation, reinterpretation of some of these poets. Okay, Viviane.
Thank you for being here. And so I'm going to talk a little bit, give you some context for this movement that started in the 60s in the UK, 50s in Brazil. And at the end, I'm going to show a few images and invite you to work creatively. It can be translation, or it can be an overflowing of personal experiences and how you can translate that, or how can you make that into a poem. So let me start with a few images. So I wanted to start with a few images of the exhibition Cybernetic Serendipity of 1968, curated by the critic and editor Jessia Hindhart. The exhibition, with a remarkable collection of works that challenge the traditional boundaries between art, science, and technology, celebrated the artistic possibilities offered by the new discoveries in robotics and cybernetics, ranging from music to mobile-type devices, proto-personal computer to language machines. The curator seemed to have brought to life two ancient meanings of the word poiesis, one which is the act of making, and the other one, the activity in which a person brings something into being that did not exist before. So such an enterprise bears an intimate relationship with the make it new of the avant-garde movement of the beginning of the century and the widespread reproduction of the work of art through new technologies. Nevertheless, the most prominent aspect of this exhibition for this study is the paramount approximation of science and literature brought about by the late avant-garde movement of concrete poetry. Concrete poetry attempted the reconciliation of opposites that involved not only empiricism and experimentalism, but also chance and possibilities, or the serendipity, as the title of the exhibition suggests. So a little bit about concrete poetry. So it's a term applied to different post-war movements, artistic movements, that were reacting against the traditional forms of art produced during the post-war period. It is characterized by two traditions, one of the Bolivian-born Swiss writer Eugene Gomringer, and the Brazilian tradition spearheaded by the Neugandris group, Haroldo de Campos, Augusto de Campos, and Décio Pignatari. After a formal meeting between the Brazilian group and the Swiss group, both of them they came up with an artistic project, publishing anthologies, poetic anthologies, magazines, and disseminating the movement worldwide. On the account of this exchange, their experiments and ideas were soon taken over in the United Kingdom by poets such as Edwin Morgan, Ian Hamilton Finley, and Stephen Benn, who is nowadays an art critic. The Brazilian presence in the British and literary artistic scene was for many decades abundant, seen and experienced in exhibitions. So the first exhibition was here at the University of Cambridge at St. Catherine's College in 1968. So it was the first time that a Brazilian concrete poet was exhibited here. And after that, a series of exhibitions follow through. So this relatively long-lasting creative dialogue produced a prolific cross-fertilization of idea and discursive relations. So nowadays, there are a few critics that re-evaluate the legacy of this work, such as the American Marjorie Perloff, who still identifies the work of concrete poetry with late avant-garde movements, or the poet Kenneth Goldsmith, another American poet who reassesses the importance of concrete poetry in light of the new electronic devices such as mobile phone, internet. For him, technology and multimedia possesses, quote, the appropriate environment in which concrete poetry and technology concrete poetry could flourish. Although I feel that although these two views of concrete poetry are valid and accurate, since they see concrete poets as forerunners of a modern way of reading that we do now, I still feel that they focus on the medium of expression and not on the epistemology of the movement as well. With the intent of finding a language that defines and characterizes concrete poetry, I found that the universe of knowledge that Hindhart resorted to her exhibition is the most adequate and appropriate. One that it's not of literature, arts, or the great humanities, but of science. So in most of their attempt to discover and innovate, the sciences always have to come to terms with the prospect of falsification via laboratory experiment. By the same token, though, it's this very same methodology that permits the opposite. The success, the breakthrough, the creation of communal scientific knowledge. In the same way, concrete poetry from its genesis in the late 50s, appear to be concerned with imitating the epistemology of the empirical research methods of science and biology, and equally the elements of chance and serendipity. So in the first, so here you have the first few lines of the move, the pilot plan for concrete poetry, which was a manifesto of the movement. So you see here that concrete poetry was a product of a critical evolution of form. So the word evolution give away that the writers were establishing a quite obvious connection between science and literature. The Darwinian plea of such an assertion reflects not only the movement's disillusionment with the poetry that had been previously produced in Brazil, which was also traditional, but also strong belief that concrete poetry would, in a dialectical relationship with tradition, represent the pinnacle of art in the country. From their very first articles about concrete poetry, the artists use scientific terms to define their work. So here in Portuguese, you can read the translation, o poeta concreto vê a palavra em si mesma, campo magnético de possibilidades como objeto dinâmico, uma célula viva, organismo completo, com propriedades físico, psico, físicas, químicas, tato, antenas de circulação, coração, viva. While the three great names of the movement experimented with the theme quite systematically, each one developed their own scientific empiricism for their innovative work with language. While Haroldo de Campos was interested in what he called the mathematics of the composition, Augusto de Campos borrowed terms from chemistry and physics to define his poetry. And Décio Pignatari elaborated on his fascination with cybernetics and engineering. The faith in the evolution with form was also aligned with the hope in the government at that time in the 50s. For a brief period before the military dictatorship, there was an economic boom in Brazil with President Juscelino Kubitschek, which is exactly the time when Brasília is built. So it was so the concrete poetry, in a way, with the scientific language, with this objectified language, was trying also to take on board the social changes of the country. The very same movement to modernize language and tradition was present in Scotland in the 60s. Unmotivated by the romantic outbursts of nationalism expressed after the revival of the Scottish idealist and language, a few poets instead chose to explore inventive avenues of thinking, brought about by the recent innovation in media and technology. Edwin Morgan became one of the central voices of this creative reaction, severely criticizing the imposition of a certain view of Scottishness to young writers. So here you have, you can read it yourself, a selection of his of Morgan's idea on modernity, on a new generation of electronic music, multi-story flats, city, so on and so forth. In the early 60s, Ian Hamilton Finlay was another original voice who was already being internationally published and intellectually stimulated by the enthusiastic disputes between the traditionalists and avant-gardist writers of Scotland. During August 1962, at the International Writers' Festival in Edinburgh, he witnessed debates and the breakthrough of his career with the good reception of his Orkney poems. Aligned with Morgan's cultural project, Finley's Poet Journal, which I find the most exquisite name for a poetry journal, Poor Old Tired Horse, gain importance as a crucial outlet for the spread of this new poetics experimentalism. This experimentation would increasingly encompass the visual, as seen in a letter. So this is an excerpt of a letter to Edmund Morgan in 1961. So he makes a revealing sketch about his interpretation of Scottish nationalism through this locale motif. While not a concrete poem per se, we see here the nascent interest of the art form, an identification with the poet pictorial nature of words, and a fascination with modern mechanical rhythm, surspreading the bucolic and transcendental. The pictographic nature of the poem is similarly reinforced by the quasi-haiku structure of the last three lines, which intermingles natural and non-natural elements of the landscape. Here, factories are ancient, and cats, moons, and foxgloves occupy the same place above the fence, perhaps gazing at the locale motif while it makes its journey through the provincial and backward balkanized mountains. From this simple illustration, it can be perceived that Finley was imagining a new kind of poetry, one which would, like a locale motif through an insular Balkan countryside, instrumentalize images in order to reproduce the modern fast-paced sensibility guided by TV shows, advertisements, and machine. In other words, Finley was using a then contemporary perception to create his own artistic ethos. While Finley was struck by technology as a pictorial metaphor for his work, Morgan was finding other ways to interact, to incorporate scientific imagery to his poetry. In a retrospective article of 2006, Poetry in Virtual Realities, Morgan discusses the role of science and even science fiction, in this case robotics, in his literary universe. So you can read the excerpts. So from these two quotations, it is clear that the poet was looking at how language could corroborate in his work of art. His vision of a scientific language would stem from the experimentation with morphology and the possibility of permutation and exchange. One of the poems in which this vision is clear is Unscrumbling the Waves at Gonhilly, if I'm mispronouncing, please correct me, which was written to celebrate the first transatlantic telecommunication signals by satellite that were received at Gonhilly Earth Station in Cornwall in 1962. Playing with the name of the satellite, so this is the poem here. Playing with the name of the satellite, Telestar, Morgan composed a permutational poem with five different sea animals. In his words, that exchange added a sense of movement to the piece, suggesting, quote, the voyage of the signals across the Atlantic, end of quote. More than combining science, and especially biology, with poetry, Morgan was effectively changing the epistemology of poetry from an Aristotelian mimesis in which art imitates nature to a scientific mimesis, as I call, in which poetic inspiration comes not from nature, but rather the comprehension and systematization of nature via scientific observation. Another permutational poem, which is very apropos, is called The Computer's First Christmas Card, from the volume The Second Life of 1968. And this poem was exhibited in the show Cybernetic Serendipity, which I spoke previously. One can see how the poet changes the first letter of the trochaic verse to reproduce the minimalistic sounds and language of the computer, which is often abbreviated to its bare minimum. The permutational language used by Morgan is similar to the almost mathematical form of experimentations that absorbed Haroldo de Campos' early work. The poem Cristal from 1957 was a composition made of three words arranged symmetrically on space. It uses as an inspiration this schematic structure of the crystal as a chemical element. So here just a few words of crystal, crystal, fome is hunger. So crystal, crystal, fome de forma is hunger of form. Crystal, crystal, fome de forma de fome, a shape of hunger. Crystal, crystal, form. According to organic chemistry, crystals are organized in a tridimensional space in which the distribution of the atoms follow an initial symmetric base. While Gonzalo Aguiar analyzed the poem as, quote, the form that exposes itself as an organized or ordained materiality, end of quote, I would further add that this form follows the principle of chemical language that aids the poet in the achievement of the perfect form. Approximating the poem to the crystal representation here of a carbon-based molecule, Haroldo de Campos creates a symbiosis of languages which are used as a systematization and understanding of the world. This is what I believe that Campos meant by estrutura geometrica isomorfica or geometric isomorphic, in which was the basis of his creational process. By using the words and its shapes as atomic nucleuses, the poet was proposing an atomic-based approach to art and enhancing the interdisciplinarity and scope of his poetry, hence creating a new prototype for artistic language. Additionally, the idea of form also alludes to the actual hunger in Brazil. So hunger is until the late 2000s was always a problem in Brazil, and especially in the 50s, the government was trying to address this problem by going further and doing more research and what could be done to improve hunger in Brazil. Aware of the historical situation of Brazilian society and alarmed by its possible results, the poet resisted the obvious temptation to write a realist poem about hunger or the consequences of the capitalist mode of production. Instead, de Campos opted for the scarcity of words and the rationality of silence to represent this social problem. In this interpretation, it's not simply a representation of Aguilar's ordained materiality, but also a political symbol for the hunger of food, effective and also more of its objective rationality. So, unaware of the social and political implication of his poetry, E.L. Hamilton Finley was captivated by Haroldo de Campos' isomorphic geometry. His 60s poems, Homage to Malevich and Acrobats, are clear homages, are clear quotations to the Campos in this respect. while the former reproduces the idea of the cube through the imprisonment of words black, block, black in a series of four squares, the latter includes the letters of the word acrobats in a square of minimum particles. Scientific language started to become more prominent in Augusto de Campos poetry later in the 60s, in the so-called committed phase of concrete poetry. After a brief initial period of playfulness, the second phase of the movement became more serious and complex. Its opposition to the 1964 military coup is not formally declared, but signaled indirectly by a scientific language which acts as an antidote for the lack of rationalism and objectivity in its post-coup debates. Following his brother's compositional practices, Augusto de Campos advanced to the theme even further and assumed the role of a scientist whose task is to observe, describe, and experiment. He several times equated poems with scientific formulas. So here you have the translation in English. I'm going to read in Portuguese. Poema concreto ou ideograma passa a ser campo relacional de funções. Poesia concreta, tensão de palavras, coisa no espaço-tempo. Augusto de Campos also transformed minimalistic linguistic structures into portable objects. Here, through the pictures, it's a little bit difficult to grasp the poem mobiles. So they were. You have to imagine that this is a flat surface, and you start to close the card, and the words open, so there is a geometrical shape to it that opens up like a pop-up card. So this poem Mobiles was done with the physicist Giulio Plaza as a partner. The example of the poem Chance, Change Roads, defied grand statements by posing an implicit question suggested by its colorful lines and movements. Here the word chance is subtly changed by the yellow hyphen in the middle of the C, which alters its meaning to the word change. The final stage of the poem is also plural, since it states that chance can equally change the world and worlds. The whole structure points to the multiplicity of meanings and uncertainties that are justified by the actual attempts to create a new poetic entity, in this case, from an origami-style paper box. So in Caixa Preta of 1974, with its limited edition of 1,000 volumes, the reference to engineering is clear in its title, Black Box. This is the name of the device used in airplanes to record not only flight information, but also the voices of the pilot and crew. Its complicated design and technology served as an inspiration for the authors to create objects, recordings, and pamphlets which resembled a computer-like structure. So that was the box, and you opened and you have an assortment of different things. What defines this creation is the idea of chance due to the random nature of the disposition of the object in the black box. So you could get a recording, a poem. When open, the reader or viewer is not exactly sure of what he will pick up first. When written, the poems are shaped through codes, such as Código here from 1973, the one in the middle. In which the multiplicity of enmeshed lines allows the viewer to see the words, we have God, ego, id, old, Dale, Deek, and whatever you can see in this enmeshed of lines. Simultaneously, Morgan in the 60s and 70s was also interested in a committed, engaged poetics, as seen in his letters to Augusto de Campos and Ian Hamilton Finley. Morgan stated that he was struck by the varieties of approaches of concrete poetry in Brazil because they could incorporate effects of irony, direct, indirect commitment. He also highlighted that the poem Cuba Grama, called by him Cuba Sin Yanquinã, was a masterpiece and that it bore comparison to African American engaged poetry of that time. Morgan's interpretation of the commitment of the poets from Brazil was an inspiration for his work. His version of the idea of an engaged poetic would stem from experimentation with words and the possibility of permutation and exchange, as already mentioned when I explored the poems and Scrambling the Waves and Computer's First Christmas Card. Augusto and Haroldo de Campos, Edwin Morgan and Ian Hamilton Finley were radically changing, in my view, the nature of poetry and using different languages to innovate their practices. However, their medium changed. In the 80s, in partnership with the physician artist Moises Baumstein, Augusto de Campos gave new life to his creations by introducing it to the three-dimensional medium of holography. His holograms, Rever and Poema Bomba, were exhibited at Triluz, Museu da Imagem do Som, in 1968, and Ideologia at the Museum of Modern Art, and elicited an immediate response of the viewer through their bodily movements. So it's a bit complicated to see through image again, but as you move, the words move and you see different meanings through the work. In the 80s for Morgan, though, meant a more pronounced dialogue with television with his 1988 volume video box. In the meantime, Finley was going the other way. He was immersed in the creation of his historical excavation motifs for his garden, Little Sparta. And Haroldo de Campos was engaged with his most important volume, that it's not coincidentally called Galaxies. With the wide availability of portable and personal computer, the beginning of the 90s brought another set of possibilities to Augusto de Campos, the only one who at that date, and still is, effectively working on concrete poetry. In a recent interview, he mentions that the virtual environment has given him the possibility of constructing an interactive dialogue with the reader. So quoting Walter Benjamin, the prophetic idea that a contemporary person finds his way clear to an opening of books, his eyes will have been exposed to a blizzard of changing, colorful, conflicting letters, locust swarms of print which already eclipse the sun of what is taken for the intellect of the city dweller. He reaffirms the ongoing changing nature of contemporary reading habits and how poetry can play with that. Indeed, I would add that although some of his works of art involve similar swarms of letters and words, he does request some engagement from the reader's intellect. It is through his clip poem, many video messages, that the the conflation of science and art is most effortless. This happens because chance guides the computer user to his or her virtual visit to the website, but also because technology is embedded in each single projection of letters and color and reproduction. Indeed, all these creations become artificial intelligences, pregnant with meaning and are ready to be used and reconfigured. So briefly comparing the poet's engagement with science, it is possible to see two different approaches. While Haroldo de Campos and Augusto de Campos turned their poetry into science, opening the verse to elements of experimentalism and chance with physical and concrete objects, Edwin Morgan and Finley used science to advance the possibilities of the verse, discourse, and wordplay. While there is little or no use asking whether one approach is better than the other, I suppose a more productive inquiry would be regarding the effective response of such experimentations in the observers. For the principle of uncertainty and arbitrariness presents in all of these four authors ever questions of orthodox relationship between object and observer. The uncertainty principle was proposed in 1927 by Vernon Heisberg. Heisberg's uncertainty principle postulates limits to experimental and simultaneous measured based on empirical observation that any observed system is necessarily disturbed in the act of viewing it. While this principle can be readily seen in the behavior of microscopic matter in quantum physics, on a macro level, these effects are diluted. Concrete poetry can be seen as an attempt to emulate or amplify the effects of uncertainties on a macro level by replacing the molecular and atomic, by replicating the molecular and atomic systems. For example, reducing language to its most basic units, letters, which are words, syllables, letters. This creates a Heisenbergian possibilities for a dynamic rather than problematic interaction between poets, reader, and poetry. So I would like to end this talk with the poem SOS by Augusto de Campos, which is in his series of computer poems. So let me play here to you because I believe that it's one of the most successful poems to illustrate this relationship. Can you hear? Sim, 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 sim. So with the impetus of transposing Morse code to poetry, the poet creates a symphony of sounds that is accompanied by words and images. The words move rhythmically in sync with the sounds, and the subjective voice of the poet becomes simply an object, experimented on, filtered, and completely synthetic as a machine, an evolution of forms that ended up in the artificiality of the computer. Seen retrospectively, I believe that the poiesis, craft, and novelty of the 1968 exhibition Cybernetic Serendipity represented an embryonic desire of concrete poetry to approximate science and biology, both in form and in meaning. Even though this was not expressed and consciously stated, the language and symbolic rationality of silence, particular of recent technological innovations, captivated the imagination of artists and poets and enabled them to explore modernity and its innovations. So thank you.